Welcome to the Deep Dive. We've gathered quite a bit of material today. We're going deep on the career, the education, and maybe the most surprising part, the origins of Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah, American actor, comedian, podcaster, writer. You probably know him.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you know his work, you know that energy, that look. But what we've found, well, it really paints a picture of this fascinating paradox behind his success.
And that's really our mission today, isn't it? We're looking beyond just, you know, the iconic roles, Ruffy from The League or Adrian Pimento, Jay and Big Mouth.
Those characters who are just pure chaos, basically.
Yeah.
Human grenades.
Exactly. And we want to synthesize all this data we have to figure out how that persona, this really recognizable explosive style, is actually built on something incredibly rigorous, disciplined, even academic and globally informed.
It really is like the ultimate good boy gone wild story, except maybe more like the good boy got a serious education, traveled the world, then decided to become this icon of comedic chaos.
Right. Just the basics first. Born December 18, 1972. So he's 52 now. Grew up in Massachusetts.
And he identifies strongly as Greek-American, right? Like 100% Greek, he said. You sometimes see little hints of that in his work.
Yeah, definitely. And the sheer scope of his career, it's pretty staggering when you lay it all out. It's not just those main roles people know.
No, not at all. He jumps from like big comedy movies to recurring roles on serious TV dramas.
And then, boom, he shows up in John Wick 3, an action movie.
Totally unexpected. Plus, you've got three completely different, memorable recurring characters just in the Michael Schur universe alone.
And we haven't even touched much on his writing career, which is significant, or co-hosting How Did This Get Made, which is, you know, huge in the podcast world.
So the big question we're wrestling with is, how does this guy, whose entire professional brand seems to be about embracing artistic chaos, structure his actual life with such, well, meticulousness?
Let's start at the beginning then, the foundation.
Agreed. Section one, the unexpected educational foundation.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the sources about his early life, the discipline needed to fuel that later energy, it's right there from the start.
It really is a complete contrast to the maniac characters he plays. He grew up in Nahant, Massachusetts, went to Swampscott High, graduated in 91.
And the sources are clear. He wasn't just like the class clown or drama kid. He was captain of the boys' soccer team.
And the track team.
Both. And on top of that, maybe the most telling detail for his later work structure, president of the marching band.
Think about that combo for a second. Sports captain means leadership, physical discipline, teamwork, marching band. That's precision, timing, complex structure, everyone working together perfectly.
Yeah, these aren't the hobbies of someone just winging it. It points to a serious level of focus.
And that focus really comes through in his musical background. This wasn't just a phase.
No way. Drum lessons starting at age 10. Studied seriously with a teacher, Steve Barrett, for over 8 years. That's real dedication. You can almost hear that mastery of rhythm in his comedic timing later.
That long-term commitment to the drums, that's like a secret key here. And look at his influences, Stuart Copeland from The Police.
Known for that complex sort of reggae-infused drumming.
Right. Stephen Perkins from Jane's Addiction, very tribal, intricate stuff. And Jimmy Chamberlain from Smashing Pumpkins, who's basically a jazz powerhouse on the drums. These are complex, dynamic players.
And he put it into practice. Played in a high school cover band, Sly Goal, sure. But then in college, he played in a bebop group. Now, for listeners maybe not deep into jazz, why is playing bebop specifically so significant here? What skills does that build?
Oh, bebop is crucial. It's jazz defined by speed, really complex chord changes, and incredibly fast improvisation. For a drummer, you need razor-sharp listening skills, instant dynamic response.
You have to keep that intricate rhythm going while everyone else is flying off on solos?
Exactly. It's high-stakes collaboration in real time. You couldn't ask for better training for long-form improv comedy, actually. That discipline of the beat absolutely informs the rhythm of the jikes, the scenes.
Okay, so college. He goes to Middlebury College in Vermont. But he doesn't major in music or theater. He majors in religion.
Yeah, another fascinating turn, right? This shows that deep intellectual curiosity. Studying religion means studying belief systems, how societies structure themselves, how people commit to an internal logic.
Which sounds incredibly useful for building believable, even absurd characters. You have to commit totally to their world's rules, no matter how weird they seem.
Absolutely. But we also get that great early story, that perfect blend of Mantzoukas' ambition and chaos, he tried to defend an honors thesis. On religious iconography, no less. Serious stuff.
Right, but the punchline is...
He admitted he basically started writing it like a week before the defense.
Predictably, didn't get the honors credit.
But it's that early glimpse. Brilliant idea, intense effort, maybe slightly disastrous execution, but still managing to pull it off with charm.
And that near miss didn't slow him down. It actually led to something pretty incredible post-graduation. He graduated in 95 and landed a Watson Fellowship. Now, some folks might hear fellowship and think scholarship, but the Watson is. Well, it's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's huge. It's incredibly competitive, very prestigious. It gives you a year of independent study outside the U.S., focusing on personal growth, free from university rules. Getting one tells you the selection committee saw something really special, maybe even that chaotic potential in him.
And his topic wasn't just travel the world. It was super specific anthropological research.
Right. Religious and transcendental music. He used that grant to travel all over North Africa and the Middle East for nearly 2 years. He was doing serious, on-the-ground, ethnographic study of music. He wasn't just backpacking, he was a researcher.
And he apparently said his grant proposal itself was horrible.
Yeah, but then immediately said he was charming in the room.
That's it. That's the man sick as hustle right there.
Yeah.
Pure personality and commitment, convincing people to back his, well, intellectual adventures.
And those adventures were intense. Lived in Morocco for about 7.5 months.
Doing what specifically?
Studying and recording Nawa music.
Okay, let's pause there. Nawa music, that's pretty niche. What is it? And how could studying that possibly connect to his later comedy?
Well, Nawa music has roots in West African slave communities, and it's central to spiritual, often healing ceremonies in Morocco. It's intensely rhythmic, cyclical, very communal, designed to induce a trance-like state.
Wow.
So studying it means studying deep commitment, shared experience, and the pursuit of this intense emotional state through rhythm and sound.
Okay, so let's connect the dots. The guy who later plays Rafi, pure chaotic self-interest, spent his early 20s documenting music meant to create spiritual trance states.
It's all about total commitment to the moment, isn't it? Whether the goal is transcendence or just hilarious absurdity.
And the travel wasn't just Morocco, Egypt, Israel, Turkey, Jordan, Syria.
He was really out there pursuing this knowledge in some pretty volatile places, and that's where things got real. He actually got arrested twice while he was abroad.
Okay, the first time. Morocco expired visa. Sounds like annoying bureaucracy.
Right, could happen to anyone. But the second time, in Turkey, that was different.
What happened?
He was arrested by the authorities specifically to stop him from traveling into an active war zone.
Whoa.
Yeah. So the academic quest bumped right up against serious real-world danger. The guy who channels panic on stage for laughs, he faced actual high-stakes situations because his research took him right to the edge.
That is just an incredible amount of discipline, experience, and frankly, risk packed into someone's life before they even hit a professional comedy stage.
Exactly. So we see the discipline, the focus, but how did all that, the rhythm, the cultural immersion, the structure, actually translate into, you know, being funny?
Which brings us neatly to section two, the improv path and the UCB years.
And the transition makes sense because, like we touched on, the skill sets overlap so much. Even while he was focused on drumming and academics, those comedy seeds were there, writing sketches for high school variety shows.
But college seems to be where it really clicked. The Otter Nonsense Players at Middlebury.
That's where he really dove in. And he made that connection explicit himself. He said he got obsessed with short-form improv because it used the exact same skills as playing jazz.
Active listening, finding the rhythm, building on what your partners do.
Instantaneously. It's pure bebop training applied to comedy.
And his college improv group wasn't just practice. It was where he met key people. Future collaborators like Jessica St. Clair, Dan O'Brien, Rodney Rothman. Big names in comedy later on.
Yeah, those early connections are vital in that alt comedy world. So after his 2 years traveling, he lands in New York City in 1998 and jumps right into the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, UCB.
Taught by Amy Poehler, no less. That's some serious improv pedigree right there.
And he became part of Mother. Now, for listeners who maybe weren't following the NYC improv scene in the late 90s, why is the Mother team such a big deal?
Mother was foundational. Yeah. It was one of UCB's very first house teams focused purely on long-form improv, the Herald. They weren't just doing quick games. They were basically writing the playbook for the narrative long-form style UCB became famous for.
So being on Mother meant you were right there, shaping modern improv alongside people like Poehler and others, who really defined that next wave of comedy. It was like a high-level apprenticeship.
But even with that kind of training and connection, making it as a comedian in New York is tough. There's that detail in the sources about his day job.
Yes. The survival job speaks volumes about his discipline again. For over 3 years, he worked in the computer graphics department at J.P. Morgan.
Not waiting tables.
Mm.
Highly technical corporate work.
Right. Just to make ends meet while doing comedy shows at night.
It just shatters that image of the flaky artist, doesn't it?
Mm.
Running that dual life, serious finance, graphics, guy by day, wild improviser by night that takes immense focus, compartmentalization.
It's the marching band president discipline showing up again. He funded his art through corporate efficiency. Patience.
And even while doing that, he was finding success on stage. Formed the Manzoukas Brothers duo with Ed Herbstman. Time Out New York called them the best improv duo in 2006.
And that collaboration with Jessica St. Clair kept growing, too. They did sketch shows. Like, we used to go out, improv, like, first date.
Their chemistry was obvious.
Yeah.
Pitched a pilot to HBO. Didn't go, but still. HBO. Then got a deal with Comedy Central. And the reviews compare them to Nichols and May.
Which is, you know, legendary status. That comparison isn't thrown around lightly. It means smart, witty, perfectly timed duo comedy.
And that partnership endures. They still work together on the podcast, Womp It Up. So this slow, disciplined build finally leads him to breakthrough as a character actor.
Which takes us to section three, the trajectory of a character actor.
Right. And that intense commitment to absurdity he perfected in improv. It found its perfect outlet in live action. Rafi in the League, 30 episodes. That role just is the Manzoukas persona for so many people.
Absolutely. Explosive, unpredictable, loud, boundary pushing.
Yeah.
Often just gross.
Yeah. Rafi's something else. And then playing the doll and the dictator with Sacha Baron Cohen kind of cemented that maximum chaos, maximum commitment brand.
And nobody seemed to understand how to use that specific energy better than Michael Schur. We really have to look at his roles across those three big Schur shows. It shows a pattern, a trust in what Manzoukas brings.
Okay, let's break it down. First up, Dennis Feinstein in Parks and Recreation. Only 5 episodes, but unforgettable. The ridiculously over-the-top cologne guy.
Feinstein is all about that high-status, aggressive, wealthy obliviousness. Manzoukas plays him with zero apologies, total conviction in his own awfulness.
Then maybe the role closest to that high-stakes reality we talked about from his travels, Adrian Pimento in Brooklyn, 9-9. 11 episodes.
You're right. Pimento is this detective, back from years undercover, completely unhinged by it. He's volatile, shouting, physically unpredictable, always on edge.
It takes incredible control to play someone that out of control convincingly and still make it funny.
Totally. And then the most abstract use of his energy, Derek Hostetler in The Good Place, 9 episodes.
Derek isn't even really a person. He's like a sentient rebound boyfriend created by Janet. Pure chaos. Wind chimes for genitals.
Right. He's a glitch made flesh, basically. His whole existence is random, summed up by yelling, Mindy St. Clair, and weird high fives.
And the genius is, Manzoukas makes this conceptual joke, this glitch, feel like a real, persistent, incredibly annoying character. He embodies abstract chaos across 3 different shows for sure.
And we should note, it wasn't just comedy intensity. He had serious recurring roles, too, like in Enlightened for 8 episodes, Transparent for 5, plus a main role in No Activity on Paramount Plus for 18 episodes. He can anchor things, too.
Okay, but let's circle back to that action movie thing. John Wick 3. It feels so different from his comedy base.
Playing the TikTok man. He's suddenly in this super stylized world of intense choreographed violence, an underworld operative.
And the same commitment he brings to yelling about, I don't know, anything Rafi yells about, he brings to these deadly serious action beats.
It shows that Hollywood sees that intensity as versatile. It's not just comedic intensity, it's just intensity, full stop. He can deliver it in any genre.
Now, even with all this performance success, we have to talk about that other path, his writing career, because it confirms that discipline underneath everything.
Absolutely. Back in 2008, NBC actually ordered a pilot he wrote, Off Duty, starred Bradley Whitford, Romany Malco, big names.
Getting a network pilot made, even if it doesn't get picked up, is a huge deal. It requires serious structure, narrative chops, understanding the commercial side, totally different skill set from improv.
But the really wild detail is about the movie Ride Along, the buddy cop hit with Ice Cube and Kevin Hart.
What's the connection?
Our sources show he got a writing credit on a draft of that script.
There's Susan.
Yeah. Apparently, he was first brought on to write it with a different vibe in mind, maybe for Andy Samberg in the Kevin Hart role. Then Universal took over, cast Hart, shifted the tone. But Mantzoukas' structural work was still part of the foundation for that huge hit movie.
So the master of onstage chaos is also crafting blockbuster movie structures behind the scenes. Wild.
And he did consulting writer-producer work on really respected shows like Children's Hospital and Portlandia 2. He's often building the playground he then plays in.
Given that voice gravelly, loud, instantly recognizable, it makes perfect sense that voice acting is such a huge part of his career now.
Which brings us to section 4, voice acting and modern media mastery.
Yeah, his voice just cuts through. It immediately signals intense commitment, whether it's for like an animated kid or a comic book character.
And he's all over animation. Jay Bilzerian in Big Mouth on Netflix, 81 episodes. That's a main character, totally defined by Mantzoukas' energy, unhinged teen angst and hormones.
And Alex Dorpenberger in Close Enough on HBO Max, 24 episodes.
And he anchors major genre shows, too. Rex Splode in Invincible on Prime Video.
Great character.
Jankum Pog in Star Trek. Prodigy on Paramount, plus the gray one in Housebroken. The common thread. These characters usually operate at 11.
All the time. Plus movie roles. Scarecrow in the Lego Batman movie. James the Dragonfly in Doolittle. Samuel Adams in America. Motion picture.
But here's maybe the most perfectly ironic voice gap. In 2018, he took over from T.J. Miller as the voice of Mr. Mucus from Mucinex.
Mr. Mucus.
The voice of literal, annoying congestion. Think about it. Mucinex needs a voice that's persistent, irritating, impossible to ignore. It's a corporate job that perfectly fits the character type he mastered. The agent of unavoidable, grating chaos.
That's actually brilliant casting when you put it that way. And looking forward, his reach keeps expanding, even into huge franchises. He played Dionysus, Mr. D, in the Percy Jackson series on Disney Plus.
Right. Just a few episodes so far, but still a major property. But maybe the biggest sign of his truly global comedy reach is his appearance on Taskmaster, the British one.
Oh, yeah. That was huge news. He was a contestant on Series 19, came in third. 10 episodes. But the key bit of trivia here.
He's the first contestant ever on the UK show who wasn't actually based in the UK when they filmed it.
That's massive for Taskmaster.
Yeah,
that show's usually such a showcase for British and Irish comedians.
Exactly. For them to bring in Mantzoukas, this American guy known for NYC improv and Hollywood roles, it shows his specific brand of committed absurdity just travels. It's globally understood and appreciated. That chaotic commitment is universal, apparently.
Okay, finally, let's get into section 5. Podcasts and personal insights. Because for a huge number of people, Mantzoukas is primarily a voice in their ears. He's practically podcast royalty.
His presence in podcasting is, well, almost overwhelming. The anchor, of course, is How Did This Get Made with Paul Scheer and June Diane Raphael.
The gold standard for hilarious, structured analysis of truly terrible movies. Again, bringing order to chaos, basically.
And then there's his status as maybe the ultimate podcast guest, king of the guests. Just look at the numbers for comedy. Bang! Bang! Over 53 appearances. He's practically part of the furniture there.
He's a regular on Womp It Up with Jessica St. Clair, obviously. Appeared multiple times on Reply All, which isn't even strictly a comedy show, more tech and internet culture.
4 times on the food podcast, Doughboys, too. He just slots in anywhere and brings that immediate hit of energy and weird tangents.
Plus the big interview shows, WTF with Marc Maron, Armchair Expert, and even the huge UK food comedy hit off menu. He's just deeply woven into the entire podcasting fabric.
Okay, let's shift to those personal details now, because they offer a really profound potential insight into why he embodies these frantic, chaotic types so well. He has a severe egg allergy since birth.
Like potentially fatal anaphylaxis if he eats eggs.
Yeah, a constant real-world danger. And he himself has linked this severe allergy directly to being a hypochondriac.
Okay, that feels like a really important connection point.
It could be, right? That external persona, careless, boundaryless chaos might actually be a way to process or release extreme internal anxiety.
If your daily life requires constant vigilance, checking ingredients, always aware that one tiny mistake could be deadly, that creates a baseline level of high alert, of anxiety, that has to go somewhere.
It's entirely possible that the characters let him act out the very lack of control he absolutely cannot afford in his real life.
Mm.
They are unhinged, careless, violently free in ways he can't be.
And the ability to manage that real-life stress, that internal discipline honed through drumming, religion studies, the corporate job, is maybe what allows him to perform chaos so convincingly so, controllably, paradoxically.
It's a fascinating thought.
We should also briefly mention, just for context, his past relationship with actress Connie Britton. She called him a great man and a comedy writer.
Yeah.
Back in a 2009 interview, right as his career was really taking off with those character roles.
So stepping back, looking at the whole picture, the synthesis is pretty clear. The guy known for pure anarchic screen energy.
The human glitch, the screaming detective, Rafi.
Is fundamentally built on this bedrock of intense discipline and structure.
Started as a sports captain, marching band president, then a religion major, a Watson fellow studying ethnographic music, getting arrested in the process.
The technical precision of bebop drumming flowed right into the collaborative precision of long-form improv. That academic hustle, charming his way into the Watson, grinding out 3 years at J.P. Morgan, it all fed into creating this unique high-energy stage presence.
He learned how to commit totally to the internal logic of a world, whether it was Nahua rituals in Morocco or, you know, the insane logic of Rafi's world in the league.
And that ability to pivot is key, too. From sacred music research to writing a network TV pilot for major stars, it suggests that specializing deeply in something seemingly unrelated can actually forge a unique, powerful voice in a creative field.
Which brings us to our final thought for you, the listener. Considering this whole journey, how Mantzoukas' early career was about deep dives into things totally outside performance, like religious anthropology and complex jazz drumming, what does his success tell us?
Yeah, what does it suggest about where the most original, impactful voices in seemingly chaotic fields like comedy might actually come from? Maybe it's not always traditional training. Maybe sometimes it's forged through the rigorous mastery of something completely unexpected, something totally outside the box.
Something to think about until our next deep dive.